gather people around that flag and see your dad hunched.
Everybody in listener land, how you doing? This is Chris Z. I'm here for the first installment ever of Sal.
Registered Ear Offenders. I'm Sal Rodriguez, also hosting this thing. And I have to say, in honor of the Chick-fil-A news stories, that is the gayest intro music I've ever heard in my life.
I wish the listeners could see me. I was actually dancing with my arms flailing in kind of a circular motion around my head.
You are, and there is a disco ball right above us as well, and Chris is wearing cut-off jean shorts.
Very, very short shorts, and a little bit of my butt cheeks are peeking out the bottom.
And you know what? I never realized how pale your butt cheeks were. They are the palest. They are more pale than the copper tone little girl with the dog chewing off her bikini bottoms.
I tried tanning, but I'm so pale it just reflects the sun away. It does nothing. I lay out in the sun for hours. The rest of me burns. The butt doesn't budge.
And yet you say that you're Latino. Chris professes to be officially Latino, more Latino than me, and yet he's the palest guy, I mean, since whoever you want to think of as pale.
I like to think that my Latino genes are what are they? They skip a generation, like I guess red hair or something.
Your kids will have leaf blowers. They'll be born with leaf blowers, but you, no.
But they won't know how to use them.
Exactly. What do we got, man? What do we got? This is our first show. We want to thank you for listening. We want to thank you for staying tuned, whoever you are, wherever you are, whatever you look like, hot chicks, call in. Thanks for joining us. So what do you want to talk about, Chris? What are we starting on today? You are in charge.
Good job, Sal. Real quick, though, if you guys want to call in at any point, that is a great suggestion. Feel free to do so. 800-893-9562 is our number here in the studio. 800-893-9562. Again, we're broadcasting live from Skid Row Studios in downtown Los Angeles. On Skid Row.
It is literally on Skid Row. There are homeless people. There's the homeless show is actually next.
Thank God that we're fortified in this beautiful high rise with this luxurious studio. I mean, I wish that the listenership could see us. And they will. We'll start posting pictures or something at some point.
This building is fortified. This building could actually withstand a zombie apocalypse. It is so airtight.
And it has a security guard who's at least half awake.
He is at least half awake.
Some reassurance.
Don't give him any Red Bull, though. I don't want him to be more than half awake. I don't want three quarters of awake. I like my security guards to be half awake.
Well, let's tell the listeners how we know each other, how this program came about, and then we'll launch into some topics. What do you say?
Do you think the listeners actually care how we know each other? Do you think they really care?
Yeah, I think right now they're turning to each other going, oh, I want to know, goddammit. I'm not listening to another word unless I get a background on these two.
I like to think the ladies are wondering what we look like.
Yes. Sal is Latino, and therefore he looks a lot like Antonio Banderas.
Yes. Yeah,
several decades younger, of course.
So sexy.
I look like every guy who ever blew up a building, and then people go, I never saw it coming. He was so quiet and blind.
he's that studious.
Yeah. Who would have ever thought a guy who knows that much and reads that much and doesn't have any friends? Well, Sal and I are both comedians. We're comedians about town, so to speak. We do stuff in Los Angeles. We met several years ago doing stand-up comedy. Wound up going on a USO tour together, performed overseas for the troops. And we've been friends ever since. You may recognize our voices. We've contributed to Drew Marx's show on Saturday, who does Bad Advice, and Gus on Sunday, who does the weekly wrap-up. We're doing something a little different, though. We're gonna kind of stay away from topics and topical material, and because we think that's been covered, and Gus does a damn fine job covering that. So we'd like to stick to something more personal anecdotes, personal stories, that kind of thing.
Yeah, we're gonna stay away from anything topical or humorous.
We're going to try to do something. So where to begin here? Sal and I have been throwing around some ideas for our first show, and one of them we came up with was The Year We Peaked.
We're going to start off with something very depressing, essentially.
I am 36 years old now, and I can safely say that I make less money than I did 4 or 5 years ago. So that's an example. I mean, that's the thing, though. You always assume when you're, 17, 18, that if you look into a crystal ball, you see yourself sunning by the pool. You produced a rap album. There's two women. One is feeding you grapes. One has got a palm frond to keep you cool. That's not typically how life turns out.
Wait a second, Chris. Well, you have to quantify, as my friend says, who's in psychology, you have to quantify and qualify peak. What does it mean to peak? What does that mean exactly?
The year when things were at their best, comparatively speaking, to how you've lived before and since. And in my case, it was 17.
You peaked at 17 years
17
old.
17 years. I didn't know it at the time. I thought it was the first of many rather than the last of a few.
So in other words, things were best for you before you ever moved out of your parents' house.
Yeah, that's a sad statement, but yet 100% accurate. And I'll tell you one particular fond memory I have was I was dating a girl in high school. She didn't go to my high school, though. And I was going to see her later that night. And I actually messed around with another girl in the afternoon. You know, we got stoned. We were hanging out in the woods. And we messed around. And only a few hours later, bam, messing around, hooking up with my own girlfriend. I felt like a pimp. That was the closest I had ever felt to a... And by the way, I don't know what the hell has happened. But that trajectory has reversed itself.
So your idea of peaking is being incredibly promiscuous.
Yeah, I guess essentially. These days, I consider a twosome to be a threesome for me. You know what I mean? I'm just one partner. I don't even want to shoot higher than that. You know what I mean?
Do you have any mirrors anymore in your room? Do you remember when you used to have sex and in front of a mirror or look in a mirror? Do you ever do that at all anymore?
No, you know, I never did that. It's funny. I think because a mirror would also reflect my pasty white bottom. So I never
his copper tone bottom.
Which, by the way, I did record a sexual encounter with myself and my ex from the same girl I was talking about. Robin was her name, and it was a horrifying sight because I didn't factor in that where the camera was, and I chose to lay on top of her. So all you really got was a shot of my back. My white flesh. It just looked like some kind of like an abominable snowman was, you know, overtaking this young lady.
So you mean you set up the camera on a tripod? You didn't do the POV thing where the camera was in your hand?
No, I didn't set it up on a tripod. I concealed it.
This is like the candid camera of teen sex. Is that what you're saying?
She wasn't a teen, though. She was 21. I was like 17.
So you had sex there on camera, then Alan Funt came out. Or in this instance, what is it, Hansen? What's Hansen from?
Who's Alan Funt?
Alan
he sounds
Funt.
Like the host of a 70s game show.
Alan Funt was the original host of Candid Camera. You said you were 36 years old. What the hell are you talking about? You should know this.
By the way, guys, we got to warn you ahead of time. Sal has this this habit of making references, to like Bela Lugosi. And it's like they're that bad. So prepare for, I promise to sidebar as often as possible. And
I'm currently working on all my Selena Gomez and Katy Perry references as we speak.
You're updating your cache references. That's funny. Well, again, thank you guys for listening. We got more show ahead. We got a guest coming in just a couple minutes, a fantastic comedian. I had the privilege of working with him not too long ago. Funny guy. We got some of his material. We're going to play that for you. But in the meantime, let's move on to another topic. How about the best prank you've ever pulled or ever had played on you?
I would love to share this. This is not the most elaborate prank. It only pranks one person. And all of us can all try this in the comfort of our own parking garages, if you will. What you need is you need a woman, preferably a girlfriend or a wife, and you need a four-door car. And here's how this works. I've done this before. It is the most amazing trick you've ever want to try. Okay, so what you got to do is you and your girlfriend are walking back, preferably to a dark parking garage. You open up the door for her, as any gentleman should. You open up the door for her. Now, what you got to do is you somehow have to time it so that when you put her in the car and she sits down and you help her get strapped in there, you have to open up the back door, okay? So what you do is you open up the back door. She doesn't know it. You strap her in. You close her inside. Meanwhile, without her noticing, you got to be so stealth, you jump in the back seat. Okay? So imagine that. Parking garage, night, you put her in. You jumped in the back seat. She thinks you're walking around, right, to let her in. As she believes you're walking around to get in, you reach around from the back seat and you grab her around the neck. And it is just the most amazing trick. I mean, it could potentially ruin your relationship.
Those were the words on the tip of my tongue.
What, ruin your relationship?
Go on. Yeah.
But it is an amazing trick. I've done it a couple of times with two different girlfriends. You do need a four-door vehicle unless you're so tiny you can squeeze behind the seat of your Mini Cooper or something. But this is the best trick that you can try. And unless it ruins your relationship, it could potentially wind up with some hot role-playing sex as well.
Wow, I didn't see that coming.
Mine was the role playing sex?
A little more on the tame side. Mine was, I think, one of my favorite pranks when we were in high school. We had a friend that worked at the mall, and he drove this funny little red car, kind of like a Chevy Chevette looking turtle looking thing. And we found it in the parking lot, and we gathered up 17 shopping carts, and piled them one on top of the other and literally built a fortress around his car. So this poor bastard is going to come out of work tired, you know, after a few hours of doing it, you know, working for $4.25 an hour and, you know, find his car encased in...
Wait, how old were you when you did this?
Maybe 17 or so.
This was the same year that you peaked. So is that a peak moment for you as well?
Yeah, absolutely.
So you're having sex with multiple partners. You're piling up shopping carts. You were the man at 17.
I was a hedonist. I did what I want. I had no care, no conscience. I don't know when I started to worry so much about the future and about what other people think and about, you know, what's, you know.
Now, see, what a lot of people don't know, for those of you who wish to get familiar with Chris, is that Chris is actually older than he is. As a matter of fact, he does have an alter ego by the name of Jeremiah Arbogast, who one day might have as a guest on the show. So if Chris is now 36, but meanwhile he's about 65 inside, how old were you at 17 on the inside?
17? I was 17. That's the strange part, Sal. At some point, it's almost some kind of affliction that, you know, maybe I went to bed. I don't know if it happened overnight or if it happened over, you know, so slowly I didn't notice it, but I did start to become older. I never guessed that I'd be walking around on handcrafted orthotics, but I do.
Handcrafted in Uruguay.
Yeah, no, these are not, I want to make something clear. These are not Dr. Scholl's. These are handcrafted orthotics where they're made from a plaster cast around your feet. And I put them in my shoes so that I, you know, my feet don't, and I don't get tendonitis in the ankles.
I'm just imagining Geppetto working on, hey, talk about old references. Geppetto is there working on Chris's orthotics. Handcrafted? What the hell is hand? I like hand-tossed. Like when I eat pizza, I eat hand-tossed crust. So you have handcrafted orthotics.
I'm not Dutch. They're not made of wood.
So you peaked at 17. You were doing pranks. I think then
I played the bass guitar sound.
You played the bass. You had sex with the women. So basically, you were 17 on the inside and out. You had no cares to be younger or older. You were there. You were present.
I couldn't be more different than I am now. If you were to say, I'm very clean cut. I think you can agree on that. I'm kind of square. You know, I mean, I dress like I'm in a Mervyn's catalog. It's just my taste. It's just who I am. I don't know when I became that person, but that's who I am these days.
So you give me a hard time because I give old references. You reference stores that are no longer in business. I
touche. You got me.
Can we just go back a little bit? Because I would like to share a little bit about when I peaked. To go back, I peaked. I would probably say when I was about 23, and by that I mean everything was in order. I looked great. I was in wonderful shape. I was running marathons. I was bench pressing.
That's right.
Yeah, I was bench pressing 225. I worked at a gym. I had long hair. Black girls loved me because they had hair envy. I made a good amount of living in the gym. I was making training about 13 people a day. But the greatest thing, in spite of all that, in spite of the sex, in spite of the money, in spite of feeling good and looking great, was the hope. The hope that has long since passed. But hope is such a powerful thing. So I think the peak for me was not only that everything was in order, but that hope was in my heart, and I imagined such a bright future ahead of me. So that was when I peaked, was when I was about 20, somewhere between 23 and 25. I would also like to say that I was cougar food at that time as well. I was the object of the cougars and the MILFs' affections at that time. I didn't appreciate it at the time.
Which, by the way, if there's any young listeners, the best sex you will ever have. I know we're naturally inclined in our early years to be attracted to genetically perfect specimens, but I promise you that the sex will be encumbered by insecurities and expectations. And a woman gets around 40, 41, 42 years old. She has what she needs. She probably cleaned her ex-husband out in a divorce, or she actually eventually had to, you know, just go to work for herself and accrue some possessions. And they're not after you for what you can provide for them other than physical, than carnage. You know what I mean? So enjoy that while it lasts if you're out there. Trust me, young men. It's the best thing that will ever happen to you. The first and only time that I was orally pleasured from behind was from an older woman.
I'm sorry. Orally pleasured from behind.
And let me just say this. It's the only time in the bedroom where I've ever gasped out loud, where I've ever literally cried out in pleasure.
And what was his name?
He called himself Jody. Actually, I think I told you about this. There was the madam, the baby doll madam.
Yeah. Chris used to date a madam.
She had actually gone to jail for pimping, yeah.
Yeah. Well, what was she called? Oh, but she wasn't like Heidi Fleiss or anything. Who was she?
No, she was Heidi Fleiss's mentor.
She mentored
Heidi
Fleiss.
She wrote a book.
So there's like a mentorship program? Is it like a multi-level marketing of madams? Is that what it is here?
It's a school. Yeah,
they wear like badges around them. It's like, you know, be a slut now. Ask me how. Is that what they have?
That's right. Yeah, and you walk up. Yeah. How do I become a slut?
I will teach you.
She. I will tell you, this is mysterious though. It took me a little bit. My perception skills were not what they are now. But she lived like in Beverly Hills, like on Beverly Glen, and had no discernible source of income. You know, so after a while, I started to go, how is this woman paying for this apartment? And near the end of our relationship, what ended it for me was I was using her computer to just briefly to send an email or something. And she got an IM from somebody who was, you know, had some, like, it was basically the effect of like, oh, hey, my back is hurting. I think I might need someone with high heels to walk on it. And I was like, oh, that's what's going on.
But how did you know at that moment that she wasn't the one to wear the high heels to walk on the guy's back? Instead, she employed the people to do it.
I don't think she was into madaming anymore. I just get that sense.
I'm sorry, I didn't know that it was an adjective.
I made that up. I don't know if that is a real word.
Madaming.
Pimping, I guess.
Well, if you could say pimping, you could say madaming, I guess, yeah.
But I'll tell you, this is funny. One time I did run an errand with her in which we took a lot of back streets and went to a secluded warehouse somewhere. And she went into the warehouse to do, God knows what was in there. But I think you can read about this in her book. Part of how she got out of being prosecuted, at least on some of the charges, was she used to play a character. She used to be her own receptionist. And she played a character complete with accent and everything. I don't remember the character's name, but when it came time to prosecute her, they couldn't find this receptionist. And they, who is she? You know, give her up. Tell us where we can find her. No, the person didn't exist.
That's what I do when the cops come to my house. You know, I answer the door like, hello, may I help you? And they go, yes, we're here for Sal Rodriguez. No, he no live here. And they go, okay, thank you. And
that's
they walk
funny.
Away.
I've got jury duty coming up, and that's my plan to go, no entiendo inglés.
That always works. You know, I've told Chris time and time again, when he gets these jury notices, that's what paper shredders are for, okay? Just shred the jury notice, because I think jurors should be paid. They should really be compensated for their tremendously hard work, I feel. But that's another topic. Chris, I want to know when we can move on to the movie topic, because I want to talk about the top 10 movies of all time, and then I want to get into a very important topic, and that is the outsourcing of American labor. We'll get into that after the movies.
I know, you've had this on your mind for quite some time, but let me, I got need some input here, Sal. We were going to talk about our favorite little website here, Sal and I's new obsession, and I'm concerned because it looks like I got about 10 minutes of life left on my laptop.
Yes.
So I'm wondering if we shouldn't do that now.
No, your favorite website. Is that Gag Factor or is that
my say favorite legitimate.
Okay. The favorite website that you would be proud to share with your family.
Right, exactly. Correct. And which you and I have won a total of $20.
Yes, we have won a total of $20, which should just about cover our parking.
That's right, just for today.
Yes.
Let's bring Tyler in real quick to have him join us on this. Yeah, take a seat, Tyler. Perfect.
He just walked into the studio. Tyler Bow, ladies and gentlemen.
Quick mic check.
Check. I'm here.
Perfect. Friend and
Glad
fellow
to be
comedian.
Here, a part of the Thrown in the Towel podcast with two of the guys.
Friend and fellow comedian, Tyler Bow. Sal, tell us a little bit about Tyler real quick.
Tyler Bow started doing stand-up in Portland, Oregon. Spent another 4 years on the scene in Boston before moving to Los Angeles last year. He's been a finalist in the Seattle and San Francisco International Comedy Competitions and recently recorded his first comedy album with Uproar Entertainment. And the album is called Carpool Companion. And it made its debut last week on Sirius XM Radio and has already been featured on 95.5 KLOS 5 O'Clock Funnies. And look for it soon on iTunes, Pandora, and in stores. Thank you, Tyler, for slumming it here with us today.
Very glad to be here.
So real quick, Tyler, what we're going to have you do. I don't know. Have you been to Funny for Money?
I have not.
They give you the setup, you provide the punchline. We were going to wait till the end of the show to do this, but my computer is dying. So let's jump into it. You want to swing around real quick? No, actually, you know what? I'll read them to you. Let's get this done before I run out, because I don't think there's a laptop available to me here in the studio.
Fine. I just hope we have some actual punchlines for this.
How about they give you 10, I think it's 10 setups, and you provide the punchline. The first one is Snoop Dogg changed his name to Snoop Lion.
Snoop Dogg changed his name to Snoop Lion. Well, you guys are professional comedians. What do you got here?
That name change is so bad. I hope he's lying.
No. Hey, he had something. I think
that actually might have him win $9.95 on Funny for Money.
It is now a crime to tell an Italian he has no balls.
Okay. Wait, are you going to read the headlines or are we going to go through each one?
We're just not producing at the level that I would have hoped. But
you are so putting us on the spot, live on the air. This was Chris's plan, folks.
Yeah, by the way, I apologize. We're going to have to shit can this bit because I'm going to run out of time. Usually what Sal and I do is we Google the story and I get a little more information and we come up with these punchlines, film them, submit them, and you can you can look us up. They have an archive on Funny for Money, and you can see what Sal and I did to win $10.
Wait, so you're saying we're going to have to abort this bit,
right? Both won money.
Yeah, that's correct.
You have to send in a video?
Yeah,
you just type it.
You film yourself producing the punchline and then submit it, and I guess the viewership votes on it. And we've each individually won. But I will tell you, it's kind of funny. The things that won were not our best work.
No, no. In fact, I think it was some of our weakest work that actually won.
If you know the Beach Boys, they're actually a significant force in music. But the songs that people know about them...
What?
Yeah, there's a little band called the Beach Boys. You may have
never heard of
them. They influenced the Beatles. Yeah, they had some impact.
They used to tour with Bela Lugosi.
Right, Bela. It was the oddest pairing in concert history.
I think that those guys peaked around 17, if I recall.
That's right. I don't, you know, it's still, for them to be at their low point in life and still be selling out arenas, I think is, you know, their peak is much higher than my peak is the point.
Did I hear something? Is Nick trying to talk to us?
That's my computer warning me that it's going to die. So here's what we're going to do. I'm going to jump into to some of Tyler's stuff here. I had a bit we wanted to play for him. We want to plug him. We love him. And I'm going to play that before my computer goes dead.
Good. We're going to play some of Tyler's comedy.
Roll it.
Boom.
I think it's weird to mix any drugs, right? I got a buddy that smokes pot and does steroids. That's a weird combination. He's definitely the strongest guy that I know, but he's too lazy to help you move or anything useful, so... What's the point? Well, we're on the subject of drugs. No one's doing meth, right? That's a crazy drug. That's wild.
Fuck. I guess it was too much. But yeah. You know what?
Can you continue?
I just crashed his computer.
What's up? What happened, dude?
No big deal. Just my
Just my computer ran out of juice.
Okay.
While I was playing a
CD. You can't plug your computer in right here?
I just don't have a power cable handy. Let's move on to the...
Wait, I want to hear the rest of that. Tyler, let me hear the rest of that stuff.
The bit is about a newspaper article that I read on crystal meth, and the article was saying how bad meth is, but then in the article they actually published a pleasure scale to show you how physically good meth makes you feel. And
that's right.
I
do enjoy this
off.
Bit. Yeah. In the meantime, what we're going to do, we're going to have our Nick here. Big round of applause for Nick, by the way. This guy is the lifeblood of this station.
He is, and he looks like a total stoner, but he's not.
And his dedication to the...
Not anymore. Oh, he used to be a stoner. No, wait, are you going to play the rest of Tyler's comedy? Because I would like to hear the rest.
Am I playing the first track?
It's track number five.
Five?
Yeah. Right. Well, Nick, when did you stop... How many minutes ago did you stop smoking marijuana? Okay.
7 months ago, he quit smoking marijuana. You know what I want to know is all these people that quit smoking, is there like a remaining stash that they would like to just donate to charity or something?
There should be some kind of thing like that, you know, like old guns or something, and no questions asked. You just
stash for cash, right? Just mail it in like gold.
What happened to? Because supposedly, wasn't it earlier this week where they officially they're done with the legal pot dispensary business?
Supposedly, Los Angeles is attempting to shut down the dispensaries, is what I recently heard.
And that's good, because that's what we need. We need less jobs and less tax revenue. That's what the city needs to better.
Let's give the power back to the cartels.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm glad to see that. You know, I'd rather have to go to a back alley than some safe storefront.
However,
some safe, well-lit storefront.
I got to tell you, one of my problems is that I truly, truly believe in my heart that the dispensary weed has like 10 minutes worth of THC. It's just not the Cheech and Chong weed that I grew up on.
You know, I Sal, it's funny. I noticed that too. I don't get quite as retarded as I would have liked.
And I want retarded.
And I've tried everything. I mean, I've tried I rotate different strains from night to night, and I just can't get, you know, I mean, I have been there before. You know, that kind of thing where like your arms are too heavy to lift. That's where I like to be.
I don't actually. I've actually never smoked marijuana, which might have something to do with the fact that I don't feel like I've peaked yet. I still have some hope. I still have some hope, unlike Sal.
Tyler has not peaked. He's married. I see that. Are you married?
Yeah, but
he
does have that to overcome.
He's
August
married.
7th, 2-year anniversary coming up.
Congratulations. Married, stand-up comedian, great career, doesn't smoke pot. I cannot relate to this guy at all.
Yeah, I know. He's a successful comedian right off the bat. I'm lost.
How are we doing in there, Nick?
We're almost ready. I'm putting it into iTunes so we can just save the CD and just play it forever.
Give me a little bit amount
I'm
of time.
Flattered.
How much time? My first bootleg.
Let's see. My first bootleg, you said?
I'm very proud.
Because I want to know if we should move on to another topic and then come back to the CD.
Yeah, why don't you move on to another topic, and then after that, we'll play the bit.
Okay, great. All right.
Perfect. Before we do that, though, Tyler, you have something coming up that you wanted to plug.
I'm going to be at Flappers August 31st and September 1st. Shows are at 8 and 10. I'll be working with Bill Dwyer.
Wow. And if you guys have never been to Flappers, it's a fantastic comedy club. It's out there in Burbank right on First Street. And I like it because it's not part of the Hollywood scene, man. It's not part of the Laugh Factory, the comedy store. All those clubs that have literally become the who's who, or basically the outlet for levity's talent. It doesn't matter if these comedians are at all capable or how long they've been doing it. It's just whoever's cute and young, and hot at the moment is who's getting up there. But if you want to see an actual professional comedian, a guy who's dedicated several years to his craft and his act, then go to Flappers, particularly on the weekend. And if you like just clean, honest to God comedy, you're going to love Tyler and you're going to love Bill, because I've worked with him as well. Just old-fashioned funny guys that tell jokes with punchlines.
Still tell me comedy jokes.
Yeah, and then, a little hat, a little cane.
I really love, especially that Flappers is in Burbank, because I find I do best with Republican audiences.
You think that's what's out there?
Burbank is a conservative town. For those
Sal plays the role of the house Negro when he's on stage.
I do. I do.
Thank you, Massa, for laughing at my jokes.
I'll be here for you all week.
Let's go ahead and move on to another topic. We're going to come back. We're going to play Tyler's material. And of course, we'll have him replug the CD, because this CD is brand new. Just dropped last week, and it's available on iTunes, did you say?
Not yet. It will be soon on iTunes, Pandora, and then hard copies will be coming soon. Those will be out in stores and stuff. So, but right now, it's just on XM, and it's getting a little bit of airplay. And there's a bootleg at Skid Row Studios.
I think. Are we up?
Yeah, we're going to go ahead and play it right now. You ready?
Well, okay. We're up. We're going to get back to the comedy, and then we're going to get to these movie topics.
Okay, hold on. Just one. You said track five, right?
Yes, sir.
Track five. Okay, all right.
That's funny. In the meantime, though, Sal, maybe we'll take a dark turn here.
Wait a second. You're going to get into the confessions?
Yeah, you're right.
Maybe is that what you're saying? Hang on. Well, let's finish up the comedy while it's lighthearted in here right. Before we go dark. I think that Nick is going to get ready. And then why don't we do this? After we play Tyler's comedy, we'll go into the movie stuff, the outsource workers, and then we'll end on a dark note.
Yes, correct. Since it may prove to be our last broadcast.
All right, Nick has given us a thumbs up.
Whenever you're ready,
smokes
Nico.
Pot and does steroids. That's a weird combination. He's definitely the strongest guy that I know, but he's too lazy to help you move or anything useful, so what's the point? I don't know. While we're on the subject of drugs, no one's doing meth, right? That's a crazy drug. That's wild. I read a newspaper article recently about meth, and the thing is, in the article, they were talking about how bad meth is, but then in the article, they published a pleasure scale to show you how good meth makes you feel. Yeah. That'll keep the kids off. Getting the hardcore data on how awesome it is. Now, this scale was based on dopamine, the pleasure-sensing chemical that your brain releases while you're doing certain activities. Here's how it went. Apparently, eating a cheeseburger, 1.5 on the scale. Sex, 2. All right, I'm glad some of you are shocked. Most of you seem a little complacent with that. You're like, yeah, it sounds about right. What? Wait, was there bacon on the cheeseburger? You gotta be kidding me, you guys. The fact that they're only half a point apart on the scale makes me think either that's the most amazing, magical cheeseburger. What, is that ground unicorn meat? What is that? Or that's lousy sex. I don't know. Maybe you guys aren't doing it right. I don't know. The scale went on. Cheeseburger was 1.5. Sex was 2. Cigarettes were also 2. What? Again, I was shocked. I've actually never smoked a cigarette, but that would explain why nobody wants to quit. Right? That's a good smoke. Right? Have a cigarette. Roll over and have a cigarette. Yeah. That's multiple orgasms in every pack. Yeah. I don't even think chain smokers are addicted. They're just horny. Cocaine was 4. That's like banging 2 chicks. Awesome. Meth, 11. Wow, yeah, wow is right. I thought about those numbers for a second. 11? That means you could add that up. That means you could be having sex, eating a cheeseburger, smoking a cigarette on cocaine, still not to meth yet. You're not even close. You're like a hand job and a happy meal short. That's mathematics. Isn't that crazy? 11? Someone's at 11 right now. Someone's running around the streets at 11, right? That person feels better than all of us combined. And we're out having a good time. How depressing is that? I did this today. I was driving here for the show, trying to get palm dry. I got the radio cranked to this techno song. I'm coming down the interstate. The show's going to be awesome. I'm rocking out just like...
Ladies and gentlemen, that was Tyler Bow.
That was good. I like that. Great job, Tyler.
Where was that recorded?
That was recorded up in Seattle at the Comedy Underground.
Nice.
Well, yeah, great club up there.
Can I ask you on the topic, Tyler?
Yeah.
If meth is an 11, what is a 12 and a 13?
I think that's it. I think you have to start mixing stuff. I don't know. I've watched Breaking Bad. There was that... Jesse Pinkman shooting heroin and doing crystal and all that stuff. I don't know if, because I think at a certain point it starts counteracting itself.
Yeah, I'm guessing if 11 is meth, then there is no coming back from anything greater than. Yeah,
I think the only thing more just physically powerful than meth at 11 would probably just be death itself.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think that that's the point of the bit is it's like, why would you put this information out there? Hey, kids, by the way, this is the greatest feeling you could ever possibly have, but it'll ruin your life, don't you?
I know you thought that already, but now we've actually scientifically proven it for you. That we've confirmed it through science that meth is indeed that freaking good.
Yeah, I'd like to know, you know, as a person that has experimented with drugs, I mean, I was with a lab with a white coat. like, where does ecstasy fit in? Where does LSD fit in on those? Because if meth is an 11, I mean, geez, how, ecstasy, what, 13, 14, acid?
That's the thing is, my frame of reference is so... non-existent.
Limited.
I've not smoked cigarettes. I haven't smoked pot. I drink alcohol and I've had cheeseburgers and sex. So I kind of peak at about 2 there on the scale. But hey, I'm pretty good with a 2. I mean, on any given day, I'm pretty much.
Tyler's should be referred to as, you know how every comic has like a subtitle, like a moniker?
Yeah, yeah.
His should be the anti-comic. He's in great shape.
Yeah.
He's positive.
Yes.
He has a healthy marriage, yeah. Healthy relationships. I've been in this game almost 10 years. I think he's the only comic I've ever met that lives that lifestyle.
Now, let me ask you a question, though, Tyler, on that topic. Are you a religious person?
I was raised Presbyterian, and it's not. I would say I've kind of not been practicing so much. It's hard to get out to church on Sunday morning as a comedian because a lot of times you're on the road, you're out late Saturday nights and all that stuff. And that's just me making excuses. Sorry, God. And
but you see that? You see that, Chris? Not only is he in great shape, has a marriage, has a good career, positive outlook. He has a spiritual life as well. I do not relate to this guy. At all.
Well, if it makes you help, I do question things constantly. I think anybody who's a thoughtful, intelligent person is going to constantly be thinking about this stuff, and that's you got to question it. It freaks me out. Like it's funny because I was raised a Presbyterian, grew up in the church and stuff like that. But I still get weird. You know, like how you get weirded out by church people sometimes when people come up and go, you know Jesus Christ? You're like, hey, take it easy, God boy. I'm like the exact same way. Like those people still weird me out, and I'm like, wow. I can't even imagine if you're like an atheist and those people approach you, it just must be crazy.
What I do like, though, is when the people approach me about with God stuff, I really, really like those little. Have you guys seen them? I think they're by the Jehovah's Witnesses. They're like little comic books. Those are awesome. I love those. And they show like a guy burning in hell and the devil's with a pitchfork.
I actually collect those for first appearances, and I hope they retain their value. I put them in a little tiny plastic sleeve. And
I want them to turn those little comic books into a movie. You know, really, I think that would be great, great entertainment. The guy who did Sin City, I think, should do the little Jehovah's Witness comic books. Yeah. Into the movie.
That's
funny.
Frank Miller's Watchtower.
Yeah, that would be really awesome. Tyler, I would love for you to chime in on some of our next topics. What we're going to do is we're going to talk about some of the movies that are out. Actually, no, these are movies that are not out. Talk about old references. I think Bela Lugosi is in some of these. But recently there was some controversy because Citizen Kane is no longer the number one movie of all time. It has now been replaced by Vertigo, but that's just on some people's list. Now, the reason I chose this list...
Where does Dude, Where's My Car fit into the mix?
Dude, Where's My Car is number 3 in Alaska. The Alaskan people really like that one. But the reason I like IMDb is because this was voted on by the users. This is by the movie watchers. The movie watchers voted on this. So essentially, this is the top 10 movies of all time, according to IMDb users, which to me are the people. Number 10, Star Wars... Episode 4, The Empire Strikes Back. Would that be episode 4? It's a V. What's a V, Chris?
A V is a 5.
Okay,
five.
Star Wars Episode 5, The Empire Strikes Back is number 10. Number 9, The Lord of the Rings, The Return of the King. Number 8, The Dark Knight. Number 7, Schindler's List. Number 6, 12 Angry Men. Number 5, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. Number 4, Pulp Fiction. Number 3, The Godfather Part 2. Number 2, The Godfather. Number one, I want you to guess at number one, Chris, because Chris, I think this might be Chris's favorite movie. What do you think is the number one movie of all time, according to IMDb users?
My favorite movie of all time. Gag Factor 14?
No, it's Gag Factor 12.
Is it Hitchcock's Vertigo?
No, that was on another list. Come on, Chris. The number one movie of all time, according to IMDb users, The Shawshank Redemption.
Ah, with 11 Academy Award nominations. I happen to own the screenplay.
That is the number one movie of all time. Do you guys agree with this list? Or are there some movies besides Dude, Where's My Car? You think maybe like The Hangover should be on here or something?
Well, if Dude, Where's My Car makes the list, The Hangover should be like number two, I would think, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I can see that, Shawshank Redemption, but it's that's a young buck on the movie charts compared to all the stuff that's out. What about Casablanca and some of these classics, Gone with the Wind, stuff like that?
It seems like they're kind of trying to update it a little bit because there aren't...
Fresh?
I think the oldest movie on here is probably 12 Angry Men, 1957, is the oldest movie on here.
Incredible.
I thought they were talking about the updated version with Tony Danza. They did a remake. Have you seen that?
I know they did a remake. Production? I have not seen it.
No, they made a movie of it.
They made a movie of 12 Angry Men?
I watched it in school one time. I think it was like an ethics class.
Really? Was Samantha in it?
Unfortunately not.
Not guilty.
But that brings me to my next topic, guys. And this is something that I think we all should concern ourselves with as Americans. And that is the outsourcing of American labor. And in this instance, the outsourcing of American actors. And in particularly, the outsourcing of American superheroes. Now, I don't know why I'm the only one talking about this. I don't hear anybody talking about this in any of the news. And that is all of these superheroes now being played by foreign actors. I personally am tired of it.
And not just any superhero. Some classic American icons from decades. I mean, you're talking about Batman and now Superman.
Batman, played by Christian Bale, originated by Adam West, is now Christian Bale's from Wales. And then Superman, Henry Cavill from Channel Islands, UK. And let's go back a little bit. Hulk, the movie, the original Hulk in the movie, Eric Bana from Australia. And now the new upcoming RoboCop played by Joel Kinnaman of Sweden. And this started back a little bit. I first noticed this in 2005. You guys remember the movie Cinderella Man with Russell Crowe? Okay, the Teamsters Union... All these labor unions were very upset that it took American jobs because they shot it in Canada. Everybody complained. They went to Canada. But nobody complained about the fact that Russell Crowe was playing an American hero, therefore stealing a job from an American.
A lead job that probably pays more than every other job combined.
Exactly. People are pissed off about telemarketing jobs. What about all these high-paying American movie jobs? Cinderella Man, Batman, Hulk, Spider-Man. Oh, Spider-Man, the upcoming Spider-Man, Andrew Garfield, although he was born in Los Angeles, grew up in England.
Bane is also a foreigner.
Yeah, what the hell is going on here? And how come nobody's talking about this? How come nobody's outraged about this?
Yeah, I mean,
it sounds like the British invasion. Most of them, a lot from the UK.
Being
we
an entertainer
have to fight
of sorts.
Another revolutionary war.
Yeah. I don't know how we do that through LA casting, through IMDb, but
which is going to be hard when we're fighting all those superheroes.
But you know, being on the fringes of the entertainment industry, I will tell you that I have seen a drastic decrease in available work and local work. The amount of auditions I go on, the amount of roles I submit myself to. Via you know, websites like LA Casting and nowcasting.com, it's literally a fraction. I mean, I used to spend at least a solid hour a day submitting myself for roles. Now I get it done 5-10 minutes.
No, it's true though. But I did hear from your agent, and apparently you're just a very bad actor.
Well, I've always been a bad actor, so why would that have any?
But here's what really pisses me off. Okay, the outsourced actors is one thing, but here's where I really, really get pissed off. In 24 films since 1962, an American has never played James Bond.
Oh.
Why the hell not? We're letting all their actors play our superheroes. Why won't they let our actors play their superhero? That's what I want to know. Sean Connery, Scotland. David Niven, England. George Lansby, Australia. Roger Moore, England. Timothy Dalton, Wales. Pierce Brosnan, Ireland. Daniel Craig, England. Not one American on the list. Why the hell not?
Oh, is that question
Nick?
Rhetorical?
Nick, do you have anything to say about this?
Isn't James Bond an English creation?
Yes, he is.
So that's why they're keeping it strictly British.
Have you been listening to the show for the last 5 minutes?
Yeah. Been tuning in and out. But that's why James Bond is nothing but British actors, because they're keeping it strictly UK, man.
Well, this pisses me off, and I would like to have some sort of affirmative action addressed in Hollywood. I would like to have American actors to play superhero roles or have at least first right of refusal before they offer an outsource. This is outsourcing, folks. We're not using that word. It is outsourcing of American jobs.
I tell you what we got to do. We got to build a giant wall around our movie studios. Keep them out.
Yeah,
keep an
idea.
And will you have American actors build this wall, or will you have British actors build this wall?
You know what I'm curious about? There's so many politically active people, especially here in Los Angeles. Why aren't they the least bit concerned about the loss of these jobs?
I'll tell you why. It's the elephant in the room. It's the elephant in the room. They're all white.
Yeah. It just doesn't seem to be as much of a crisis when it's white people.
It's only a crisis if a brown person gets your job. It's not a crisis if a white person gets your job.
Did I tell you, I jokingly said to a friend of mine, she's from Canada, just moved down here a couple months ago. She put up something on Facebook, and she used the word favorite, F-A-V-O-U-R-I-T-E. So I put a little comment there saying, hey, you know, you're in America now, learn to speak English. If you were in Arizona, they'd ask to see your papers. And of course, that was a joke. They're not going to ask to see your papers. But I guarantee you, and that's my opposition. I'm not opposed to local, state, federal governments taking action against illegal immigration. But when it's clearly defined as who has brown skin, who has, you know, because they're not going to pull somebody over because they have a Canadian style accent or an Australian accent. You know what I mean? It's not going to be applied across the boards. And that's what bothers me about it. Like policies like Arizona's.
I'm sorry, Tyler, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say it'd probably be too difficult for the police to get to an Australian guy or a British guy because they tend to be swarmed by young American girls. Holy crap, those girls love the accents.
And on the movie sets. That's why, because these guys are not in Arizona. They're on the movie sets taking our acting jobs.
Yeah. Jesus, let's stage a protest.
But what I'm going to boycott Hollywood. What Chris means also is that if he and I were driving together in Arizona, they would essentially allow him to move on and take me out of the car, even though he is fluent in Spanish and I am not.
Yeah, that's true. I would have to speak on Sal's, but I would have to say that I own Sal or that I was returning him to his country. That's why I was heading south. I was about to drop him off at the border.
Here's where you guys take advantage of the situation. Just work on an accent. You get pulled over, you know. A cop asks you to step out. Say, Crikey, I'm just going to the movie set. I'm filming a new super comic book movie.
That was good. Tyler, can you do a British accent? Because I think you are in line to play the next James Bond.
Yeah, I think I could probably do that, you know. But there's different British accents, you know. There's
you got the guy that's like the Cockney guy that's going to be out there. It's not like the classiest guy.
Blue collar, yeah.
Yeah, and then you have like the James Bond who is a little bit more elevated. It's like
a little erudite, a little sophisticated.
I don't even know. What would James Bond say?
What is it? Martini?
Shaken, not stirred.
Yeah. Or is that the old one? Does Daniel Craig say that?
Yeah, I don't think anybody knows anymore.
Oh, no. You know what happened? In Casino Royale, Daniel Craig was drinking a beer. And some of the diehard fans were upset about that.
It was
that
a big flap, yeah.
Yeah, because he was drinking a beer.
Yeah. Bring me a Four Loko, please. Four Loko. What if James Bond is just getting bombed on Four Locos?
You hear that, Hollywood? We got the new James Bond right here in the studio, and he is an American. I'm sorry, you are an American, right? I looked at your intro here. You're originally from from Portland, Oregon.
Oregon. Last time I checked, still part of America.
You know, for the first time in my life, Sal, I'm starting to understand that kind of outrage that older people feel when they watch icons from their youth kind of going up in thin air. Because as much as I hate to admit it, I foresee the day, probably in 5 to 10 short years, where The Situation is playing James Bond, you know what I mean? And he's drinking. Yeah, he is drinking. He's drinking like a vodka Red Bull. He's fist pumping, and you know.
By the way, The Situation, was he in Casablanca?
No, he's more of a, how do you say, current reference?
Oh, okay, got it. I'm sorry. I'm not good with those. I don't have what you call a cable. By the way, I had air quotes in my hand for the listeners.
It's always good to do a lot of physical stuff. Listeners like physical stuff.
Do you want to go into confessions, guys? Do you want to do that?
I think so. Tyler, now you're welcome to join us here, but we're going to go down a dark path that you may not be able to come back from.
No. You have a healthy Presbyterian man, and what Chris wants to do is corrupt you. That's what he wants to do.
Here's what I'm trying to do, Sal. I'm throwing the gauntlet. Is that the right word? Throwing the gauntlet out there, letting the audience, the listenership know that you and I mean business. We're not just talking. We intend to form a personal bond with our audience. That's why we're kind of straying away from headlines and topical material, because I want people to feel like they actually know us. We're not just searching for anything to talk about just to kill an hour. I want to form a bond with our audience.
So you want to make love to our audience, is what you're saying?
Eventually, hopefully. But for now, I'll take just them not changing the station. That's my immediate goal.
Chris wants to be very transparent for this show. I would just figure we would have some wonderful comedians on. And
Chris is very transparent.
He is. I can see his veins. But he wants to really form a relationship with the listeners, and I really admire that, and with my intimacy issues, I'm completely terrified of this. But I'm willing to go along for the ride, so let's see what you got, Chris.
All right. I'll start things out. I may have to go about this in a slightly vague fashion.
What are you embarrassed about? You pretty much already told everyone that you got your butthole licked and it was the greatest moment of your life. So.
Right. Yeah, but that's not against the law.
Oh, okay.
even if it should be.
So these aren't confessions as much as...
Well, it doesn't. I guess suppose it doesn't. That isn't the criteria. It doesn't. That isn't the litmus test. It doesn't have to be illegal, but something that maybe you've never discussed with someone before. And only because the statute of limitations has lapsed, are you willing to discuss it now? That's what I was kind of hoping for.
No, hang on. Let's
Chris
get this
said
clear.
Before it got real.
What is the statute of limitations? Are we talking 6 months, 10 years? What is it here?
I don't know, buddy. What am I, an attorney?
I don't know. You mentioned statute of limitations. I want to know how much time. Is it like last week, 6 months, 10 years, 20 years? What are we talking here?
Well, ideally, it would be you shouldn't be choosing it yourself. There should be a degree of research. You don't want to go 6 years is the statute of limitations. No, it's 7, and now you got to deal with the county prosecutor.
Okay, I understand. So in other words, you want us to reveal some of our true-to-life illegal activities, of which I've never participated in. You want us to reveal that on the air and hope that there is an actual statute of limitations so we cannot have the federal prosecutors bust down this door and drag us away back into literal Skid Row.
Hey, buddy, you go as far as you're willing to go. I won't be held responsible for it.
Okay, then you go ahead, Chris. I'll follow you.
Well, it could be something as simple as, I did have to take a drug test once, and I went to great lengths to... This is before head shops were prevalent and you could kind of buy cleansers and kind of do it legitimately. But I actually had to do a thing where I smuggled a certain amount of clean urine. And here's what I did. I bought a cigar because, cigars tend to come in those plastic cases. So I dumped out the cigar and I used that case to contain the fresh urine. And I thought about inserting it in my rectum. But I didn't do that.
But it was hard to get the mistress's face out of the way.
Exactly. I went to do that, and I poked her in the ear, and she got... I ended up smuggling it in my sock. And while I was getting a physical, for I think it was for employment while I was getting a physical. I had it tucked in my sock, right? Unbeknownst to me, they did an EEG where they put the little pads all over your body, some on your chest, some on your legs, some on your arms. And I could actually like feel like the lady's finger was within half an inch of where the tube was, residing in my sock. And, if she sees this, this is not going to go well. And I wrote an essay about it. I used to have it up on my website, but I took it down because I didn't want some potential employer, to see it.
Good call. Take it off the website and put it on the airwaves.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to reach a bigger audience with this.
Take it off the website that had 25 hits and put it on. what I did is I went in there and I kind of joked around, because I feel sometimes that when you want to sell something, like the best way to do it is to kind of come out with it, to go on the offensive, so to speak. You know what I mean? When you're trying to sell a lie, sometimes if you're out with it, you just come right out. Yeah. It psychologically convinces people, like, well, look how open and honest this guy is. Certainly he's not lying. So I made a lot of jokes with the two kind of lab techs that were helping me, do my various tests or whatever. And I went into the bathroom, and when I came back out, they said, hey, there's something wrong here with your urine. And I go, what do you mean? They go, well, it's way too clear. It just looks weird. And I was starting to sweat bullets, but, I contained it. And I go, oh, well, that's strange. And then they started laughing. And what they had done was they played a trick on me, because the whole time I had been suggesting, that they play tricks on people. Like, hey, should you ever tell anyone they have a disease they don't really have? And then go, ha, is that somebody else's file? And so they just wanted to show me how funny it would be if they played the trick on me.
Did they find tobacco leaves in your urine?
No, I was careful to rinse it out. But luckily for me, I have a friend who suffers from substance abuse. So he's clean, and I know that his urine is like 100% clean. Because if you know anything about like narcotics and AA and whatnot, they don't allow any kind of like, if you're clean, you're clean, or you're not.
Tyler does not know. He's never done drugs.
Yeah, but he didn't live in a vacuum, dude.
Yeah, that doesn't mean I don't go to meetings.
He goes to 12 steps for the material.
He goes to 12 steps to meet the weak women that just need the self-esteem boost.
Yeah. So give us the wrap it up. Did you get the job?
I have been pinched. That job I did get, though I have been pinched before.
Yes.
And I'll tell you, because one time what happened, I applied for a job, and this is back when I was in college, and for 2 weeks, I didn't hear anything. And I called a couple times, and my calls were never returned. And I finally gave up, right? Almost 2 weeks later, I get a phone call at like 7:30 in the morning. And the lady tells me, hey, Chris, it's me from HR, this place. Listen, I got really sick. I've been out of work for almost 2 weeks, and I'm sorry about that, but I'm back in now, and I want to get this thing going. Can you come in and do the test today?
And he's like, let me put down this needle. I'll be right over.
Yeah, so I rolled the dice, and I flunked that test, and that was an embarrassing conversation. One of the I had to go back in the HR office, and the lady was literally chastising me like a child,
Now, I've never taken a drug test for employment. What type of employment were you seeking when you took a drug test?
I remember I was working for the Radisson in Orlando, Florida, right down the street from where I was going to school.
Swanky.
It paid well, but I did not get the job.
I've done a urine test. I've also done a hair test.
Wow, I've never done that. What kind of profession requires a hair test?
I'm trying to think of what job it was for.
And professional comedian.
The thing with the hair test is that they can go back as far as 8 months, I believe.
Jesus.
With the hair sample.
So basically, Nick would be screwed because he only gave up pot, 6 months ago, did he say, or 7 months ago?
Yeah, still in the hair.
Yeah, it's still in the hair, but fuck it.
Shave your head. Shave your head.
No way, man. The hair stays.
Nick, did you have to do a drug test before you became an engineer here?
Hey, we drug test here at Skid Row, and you guys are all dirty, and you're going to have to leave right now.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, the test is if you don't do any drugs, you're out of here.
We didn't find any drugs in your urine. You're fired.
I do I do think if we just braided Nick's hair, it would serve as hemp rope.
Let's do it. Let's get some girls in here to braid my hair.
We'll call him Nick Lyon.
I might have drank enough energy drinks to produce some kind of false positive for some kind of amphetamine or something like that. That's one of my vices is those energy drinks.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
I'll probably get kidney stones like next week.
Yeah, I drink two monsters back to back these days, 16 ounces apiece, just back to back.
Do you find that after you drink like two, you get like an excruciating headache and your heart starts to flutter, but then when you get into like the third and fourth one, everything kind of goes away and you're like, problem solved.
And then you're like a 12 on the pleasure scale after three or four.
No, yeah. I don't find that. That's that's horrifying.
You start to sweat and your heart just beats in your chest like, bum, 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 bum. That's now, awesome.
You know, it's funny. I don't have that, but what I mean, I genuinely some days don't. I don't feel alive and well until I have my caffeine. Right. I guess it's yet another thing about being
adult. While we're on confessions and the energy drink things, I asked a buddy one time. I was trying to figure this out because I kind of feel like, you know, those energy drinks, you know, they get you up, they get you going. I was like, what's the Red Bull to cocaine ratio? Like, how many do you have? You guys have any experience with cocaine? Would you the yayo, as you might say, Sal? is there any like five Red Bulls would get you there, or is there any kind of, is it even close? I have no idea.
It's not even close, because essentially nobody has ever given a blowjob for a Red Bull.
You'd have to show up like a whole a pallet of Red Bulls. This is $600 worth of Red Bulls, lady.
Yeah, nobody's getting their head chopped off for Red Bulls.
Guys, we're down to 3 minutes, so I need you to jump in here. Don't leave me hanging with the confessions, because maybe, depending on what you're willing to offer, I might one-up my own self.
Okay, well, you know what? I'm just going to kind of piggyback on what you said. I'm going to piggyback. But here's why I may trump you, though, because although I'm piggybacking on what you said, there could be federal consequences for what I'm about to say. And that is that I had an older sibling who was a major...
Had.
Well,
uh-oh.
Have.
Oh.
Okay. And he needed to get into the armed forces. However, biggest weed head, probably one of the biggest weeds I've ever. In fact, he taught me everything I know. Let's put it that way. But essentially, he needed to get into the armed forces. His urine would have been completely dirty. I was 10 years old at the time. This was at least a year before I started smoking pot. And he used my urine to get into the armed forces.
That's funny. Did I ever tell you about my one of my best friends, Eric, from kind of right about college time?
No.
He applied for an officer position in the Army, and we actually had an investigator come to our house and sit down and interview us and ask us, have you ever seen Eric use drugs? And I looked this guy in the eye and told him no. Eric and I had actually bought like an armoire, carved it out using a saw, and used it as a grow room. And I looked this guy in the eye and go, no, I don't think I ever have.
And where is Eric today?
Doing quite well for himself. I'm reluctant to divulge details, but he used that top secret security to get a job in the private sector, making more money than you and I make in a decade.
I want to make it perfectly clear for everyone listening that I will lie for you, Chris, if it means it would enhance your career. I would lie. But I want to hear what Tyler has to say. We got 1 minute left. Give us a confession, Tyler.
Quick confession, not as crazy as your guys, but one summer, a group of my friends and I, we killed a fisherman with our car. We tried to keep it a secret. He came back and actually hacked each of us to bits with a fish hook, except for I survived to tell the tale.
And then you sold that screenplay to Hollywood. They stole the idea. You were never properly compensated, right?
Yeah. And that movie was my story was played by young Jennifer Love Hewitt.
And here we are in the summer. How appropriate.
Yeah.
Well, guys, unfortunately, we're down to about 40 seconds, so I'm going to go ahead. I'm going to plug my gig. I'm going to be in Doc's Saloon in Carlsbad, California tonight. Show starts at 8 o'clock. Tell me once again, Tyler, where you're going to be.
Flappers Comedy Club in Burbank, August 31st, 8 and 10 o'clock, and September 1st, 8 and 10 o'clock with the always funny Bill Dwyer. Thanks for having me on the program, guys.
You're quite welcome, buddy. Sal, you got anything going on?
Yes, in about 2 hours, I will be cleaning my cat box and giving them their thyroid pills.
However, guys, if you do want to acquaint yourself with Sal, you can find him on Barefoot Sal, right?
Well, salrodriguez.com, and then I got some YouTube videos. Look up Barefoot Sal on YouTube. I got all kinds. I do all kinds of stuff. I don't do any one thing. But listen, so the name of our show is Registered Ear Offenders. This is Sal Rodriguez, Chris Z.
Good night.